18. Lorraine recovered rapidly from her surgery, and Carol felt confident in scheduling the next implant, Aiden. That would give her time for one more, Ben Clarby, before Ralph Egan left the island. Although Julian had news about that. He intercepted her leaving the hospital after her routine examination of Lorraine.
Caro, what are you doing today?
His manner toward her seemed as friendly as always, although without any hint of flirtation or sexual tension. It seemed that once Caro's attraction to him had dissipated, his attraction to her had vanished as well. She knew why she had changed. Being manipulated had always been for her the great destroyer of sexual desire. She understood Julian less well. Had his attraction to her been faked from the start? Or could he just turn it off like a faucet when it wasn't returned? Perhaps he was so sure of an endless supply of women drawn to his looks that when one moved beyond his charm, he just shrugged and moved on. She said, "Barbara, Molly, and I are having lunch at the Brack Reef Resort, and then George is going to explain the mysteries of time to me."
"Good. But you might want to Google your new backup surgeon. Sam closed the deal with him this morning, and he'll arrive 3 days from now. I think you'll be impressed. His name is Trevor Martin Abruzzo."
"Is he newly board certified, or is he coming from a hospital post somewhere?"
"He... Sophie, what is it?"
One of Julian's few female software techs had rushed over to Julian.
"It's Aiden! He's vomiting all over the security office."
"Vomiting? Were you guys partying last night?"
"No! Anyway, Aiden never drinks that much. He told me to get you or Caro or Camilla."
Caro said, "What are his other symptoms?"
"He's bending over and clutching his stomach, and he's sweating hard."
In the security office, Aiden lay on the floor beside a pool of vomit. Caro examined him swiftly. Fever, elevated pulse, stomach pain that he described, gaspingly, as an 8 out of 10. She was most alarmed by the gasping, although his lungs sounded clear.
"It could be food poisoning," Caro said.
"Aiden, have you eaten anything unusual in the last 24 hours?
No.
Julian and Sophie, one on each side of Aiden, got him to his feet and then to his room. Camilla and Luskin arrived together from Watkins's room. Aiden's small bedroom was jammed with people as more of the tech team arrived to stand uselessly inside the doorway. Evidently, Aiden was popular. Sophie knelt by his bedside, caressing his shoulder and murmuring.
Julian said, "Everybody out, so Dr. Luskin can examine Aiden. Back to work. I'll keep you updated on his condition. Sophie, that means you too."
Reluctantly, the software team drifted off. Caro said, "Dr. Luskin doesn't need me, so I'm going to keep the lunch date with Molly and Barbara.
Unless you think there's a reason I shouldn't?"
"No, go.
You can't do anything here. But Aiden has surgery in 2 more days. If it's something he ate, will he be well enough for the operation?"
"Almost certainly. 24 hours, usually, for food poisoning."
"You don't think it's some sort of virus that he could have passed on to Sam? We had a tech conference last night."
"I'm sure Dr. Luskin will run tests."
"Okay. Go have your girls' lunch. And be sure to try the cassava cake, an island specialty."
Caro intended to Google the new surgeon before lunch, but as she crossed the courtyard, Molly emerged from her room, dressed in a clinging pink sundress and high-heeled strappy sandals.
"Caro, you're not wearing that, are you?"
Apparently not, Caro said, glancing down at her khaki shorts and plain white tee, pretty much what she'd worn to the beach bar once before. Molly said,
"Barbara didn't tell you? Thursday's our dress-up day at the hotel. Gotta give the tourists some place to wear their fancy duds. Do you have anything? Because I'm too curvy to lend you anything, and Barbara's too tall."
"I can put something together. Come with me and give me your opinion.
You look great.
And anybody who can wear pink clothes with orange hair is clearly worth taking fashion advice from." Molly pronounced Caro's yellow sundress acceptable, even with flat sandals, as long as Caro added a chunky gold necklace and drop earrings, both supplied by Molly. Barbara appeared in a simple, dramatic, dark blue maxi dress with hand-carved African jewelry. The hotel dining room was crowded, precluding any discussion of the project. That was fine with Caro, who was still chewing over her last session with George.
"So," Molly said after their wine arrived and they'd ordered food, "tell us your story. Where are your parents? Do you have siblings? Do you like them? Have you ever been married? Do you ever want to be?"
"Molly," Barbara said, and to Caro, "she's really a very good doctor. She just doesn't recognize boundaries."
"I recognize them," Molly said with mock indignation. "I just jump over them. How else can I get into people's heads and see if I like them?"
"Caro?" Caro said, "parents both gone. One sibling, a sister, whom I adore. Never married. Wary of the whole idea."
"Why is that?" Molly said.
"Bad long-term relationship?"
"Not exactly."
Not true, but Caro had given all the personal information she intended to until she knew Molly and Barbara better.
"What about you, Molly? Ever married?"
"Twice.
Didn't we establish at our last beach trip that I have lousy taste in men?"
"Well," Barbara said, "you don't have to sound so proud of it."
Caro laughed. These were evidently their friendship roles. Molly acted outrageous, and Barbara acidly objected.
Clearly, both women enjoyed it, and Caro, a little surprised, found that she did too.
Barbara said, "Just to complete the inquisition, I had a partner once. For 5 years, it didn't work out."
Molly said loyally, "Because Naomi couldn't recognize a good thing when she had it."
"But Caro didn't answer my question. Are you wary of men because you had a bad relationship?"
Caro, who hadn't eaten all day and could feel the wine pleasantly fizzing her head, said, "My sister says I'm a reverse avocado."
"A what?"
Caro explained Ellen's theory of Caro's mushy, hidden depths, finishing with, "I'd rather be considered a lime. Tart, but loaded with vitamin C." Molly said solemnly, "I'm a banana, because—"
"Don't go there,"
Barbara ordered, and Caro laughed. Barbara added, "Tell us about your sister. Older? Younger?"
"Younger, by nearly 3 years. Ellen has 2 daughters.
"You're fortunate," Barbara said. "All I got was brothers, 5 of them.
Molly said, "And I'm an only child, which is why I think I'm entitled to everything. You did your residency and fellowship at Fairleigh Memorial, right? Was it a good place to—"
Molly realized what she'd just said.
"I mean, up until—" "God, I'm such an idiot."
Her blush became as vivid as her hair. "It's okay," Caro said. Of course they'd Googled her. And of course they knew about her massive online shaming.
"I'm over it."
Barbara shot her a keen glance but said nothing. Molly plunged right in.
"I don't know how you can be over it. You got a really shitty deal, Caro. But at least it brought you to us, and I'm glad it did."
Caro, uncomfortable with such easy warmth, was saved from answering by a server carrying lunch. The rest of the meal passed pleasantly, without difficult questions. The island specialties, turtle stew and cassava cake, were delicious. Caro was surprised to find that the 3 of them had been talking for nearly 2 hours. "This was as much fun as the first time," she said, a little shyly.
"I hope we can do it again."
"Absolutely," Molly said, and Barbara nodded, smiling. But when they returned to the compound, Aiden was still vomiting intermittently, with fever and chills, and Luskin had had him moved to the hospital wing. "Just a precaution," he told Caro. "The diarrhea and vomiting are severe, but not life-threatening." Aiden was receiving fluids and meds via IV, and Luskin was not worried about him. "I'll have some lab tests run, but I don't think it's a norovirus since no one else is sick.
He'll recover fine. But James is in a rage because I suggested that something in his kitchen might have been contaminated.
Caro could imagine James in a rage. She changed back out of her dress and Googled her new backup surgeon. Trevor Martin Abruzzo, 38, had attended a public high school in depressed Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. College years at the University of Pennsylvania, graduating summa cum laude, Harvard Medical School, followed by a surgical fellowship under the nearly legendary Harold Gaynor at Mass General. Then he joined Doctors Without Borders and served in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, operating under almost impossible conditions. That ended in Kinshasa, after he performed cranial surgery on the 19-year-old daughter of a notorious African dictator. The girl died, and Abruzzo barely escaped the continent with his life. For the last few years, he'd been with the World Health Organization, sent with various short-term teams into crisis areas. He spoke French, English, German, and Lingala. Caro found a medical analysis of the operation on the dictator's daughter, who'd had an aggressive glioblastoma multiforme in the right temporal lobe. Abruzzo's 11th-hour operation had shown brilliant technique, but Jesus Christ himself could not have saved this girl, a fact that made no difference whatsoever to the dictator or his henchmen. It should, however, have made a huge difference to American hospitals hiring star talent neurosurgeons. So why was Abruzzo coming to Cayman Brac instead of Mayo or Johns Hopkins or New York Presbyterian? She looked for something more personal. After some searching, she found his anonymous blog, titled Reports from a Medical Front. Whatever Caro had expected, this was not it. He'd written one brief entry about the operation, which was how Caro's search engine had found the blog. He described the craniotomy in dry medical terms, seemingly designed to either baffle or bore anyone except other physicians. The patient was not identified. The only personal note was the last sentence. At least I could see her safely home. What? Subsequent blog entries were sparse and, with one exception, just as dry. No wonder he got so few hits. After she'd read half a dozen entries, Caro went back to his resume. At Penn, Abruzzo had been pre-med, but had minored in physics. He'd founded the Spooky Action at a Distance Drinking Club, a distinction that seemed at odds with the colorless scientific recitation / speculations of his blog entries. Various members of the club, including Abruzzo, had been arrested by campus police for disorderly conduct, twice. His picture was unremarkable. Clipped dark hair rippled with gray. Deep brown eyes behind sturdily rimmed glasses. Firm chin. Skin a light brown that could have been either a deep tan or some mixed ethnicity. Pleasant enough looking, but no one you'd notice in a crowd. Next to Julian, he would look like an owl beside a peacock. What brought him to this weird project in the Caribbean, especially as a backup surgeon? He outranked her in experience, credentials, age, everything. Was she now his backup? That was not what she'd signed up for. And if she was being demoted, wouldn't Julian have told her so? But she already knew that she didn't understand Julian. Hidden depths, that one, Ellen would say. Ellen, who hid nothing. Disconcerted, Caro closed her laptop and turned to George's folders, hoping for information without too many equations.